Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we welcome back veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for the latest edition of Pets and Vets. So if you have a question about your dog or your cat, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. Usually a popular show, these Pets and Vets shows. So call early and prepare to wait a bit. 800-348-2551 is the number. You can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Your pet calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets. Today, here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University and is now retired. It's great to have her on the show. Get her off the golf course for a couple hours here. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a pet question. 800-348-2551 or email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Now, if you email, you know, keep it detailed enough, but not 10, 12 paragraphs. It takes a long time to read. So try to be concise, but also include the info we need for the doc to talk about it. 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, how is retirement?
Well, I just came off the golf course.
You truly did.
I played nine holes this morning. A friend of ours has a group that he plays with, and they call it, let me see if I can get this right, NHL, nine holes lunch.
That's
so
nice.
You play nine holes, and we have lunch.
So what's your handicap?
I'm around a 19.
So you're okay.
I'm decent.
Yeah.
I have my moments.
Have you been working on your game?
Not really.
No?
Just playing a lot.
So, but you still remember about pets and stuff?
I do.
Do you ever get the call where you just say, gosh, I got to go back into work. It's driving me crazy. I got to go back to the office.
No.
I knew it.
I mean, honestly, I miss my clients. I miss the animals that I was taking care of. But I got to say, getting up in the morning and just having a relaxed cup of coffee, and really nice.
That sounds glorious. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's rubbing it in now, and she's our guest on the show. It's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. This one came in about 30 minutes ago. It's from Cheryl. And, oh, okay, well, we're already here, so I might as well read it.
Starting with poop?
How did you know? I have an indoor 11-year-old neutered male Norwegian forest cat. First of all, I've never heard of a Norwegian forest cat.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Really?
I had a cat that looked—he was a mutt, but he looked like a Norwegian forest cat.
What do they look like?
They have, like, medium-long hair, usually brown tigers. Oh. Really pretty.
Wow. Well, now we'll get to the poop. 1 year ago, he had anal gland issues with one side rupturing while being extracted. He was treated with antibiotics and has done pretty well since, although it took a long time to heal. However, for the past 4 to 6 weeks, he often passes stool outside of the litter box on carpets or hardwood flooring. Stools look normal, no straining or scooting, but cleans himself quite a bit after the old BM. Nothing has changed with brand of litter, litter box, or its location. He loves treats, playful, eating wet and dry food, and drinking well. I gave him probiotics as directed a few times per week. I had him in for a vet visit last week. Nothing seemed to be a problem, but we have no solutions. I'm at a loss. Any ideas? And that's from Cheryl.
I always wonder when cats have stools outside the litter box that look normal, if maybe they're just very mildly constipated. So they were trying to pass the poop in the litter box and it didn't quite come out. And then they leave the litter box. So she could do a couple of things. One would be try a little Miralax to see if it's a constipation issue.
Right.
I would start slow, like an eighth or a quarter of a teaspoon a day.
So Miralax, it's in a liquid. What is
it's
that?
It's a powder.
It's a powder.
It's a powder.
And so you put it right
and
in the food?
And you mix it right in the food.
Ah, okay.
Canned food works great. Even dry food, because most of the dry food has enough oil that the powder will stick to it.
Uh-huh.
And you're using such a small amount. And you just do it to effect. So if you give it to him and they start having soft or mushy or diarrhea stools, then he doesn't need it.
Okay.
If it fixes the problem, then great. You can just use it. If it turns out not to be I need a softer stool, then it might be he actually needs the opposite and he needs some fiber in his diet.
Uh-huh.
And one of the easiest ways to do fiber is either with something like pumpkin, because cats don't need that much.
Mm.
And a lot of cats actually like canned pumpkin.
Really?
Or you could do one of the like Metamucil or one of those, but you'd need to find a non-flavored variety.
Uh-huh.
And again, you just start really slow and work your way up.
Okay. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's our guest today. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Why don't we do one more email here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. This is from Catherine. A friend of mine's dog has recently started having some seizures. The dog has had 3 seizures in about 8 months. She's seeing a veterinarian, but is reluctant to try medication at this time. I heard somewhere that giving a dog wet food so that they have better hydration can help them not have seizures. Is this medically accurate? It clearly won't hurt the dog, but will it actually help to have better hydration, resulting in the possibility of less seizure?
Probably not.
Really?
Yeah. Seizures are basically caused by an electrical issue in the brain.
Yeah.
So things are either blocked or connecting incorrectly or whatever. So there are a lot of different causes for seizures.
Right.
Generally, the rule with seizures, and not knowing the age or the breed of this dog, is you don't want them to have more than one seizure in a month. So 3 seizures in 8 months, I would not be medicating this dog.
But if a person had that happen, you would medicate the person, or at least go to the doctor, right?
I'm not an MD. I don't know. But generally, in veterinary medicine, we don't treat seizures unless they're either having them more than one a month, they're having more than one in a day, or having what we call cluster seizures, where they have, you know, have one seizure come right out, have another seizure come right out.
Yeah.
Or one that's longer than 5 minutes. Most seizures in animals are seconds long. They're like 20 seconds or whatever. So if it's just 3 in 8 months, you basically keep a calendar and you want to see, are they increasing in frequency? Are they increasing in length? Is the dog normal between the seizures? If they're not normal between the seizures, then it's worth looking into. But otherwise, you just monitor them.
So, in other words, if they're very rare, like this writer here, I mean, aren't you concerned about why it's happening?
Unfortunately, it's often hard to tell. You know, you could do an MRI to see if there's a visible structural issue, but a lot of times it's microscopic. It's, you know, the neurons are not talking to each other correctly. So you're not going to see anything in most animals that are having seizures unless there's a structural cause. And because medications can have side effects and long-term issues, we try to avoid using them unless they need it.
Have there been any indications that environmental factors can lead to seizures in pets?
I mean, sure, if they get into something toxic, and certainly there are certain things like sugarless gums and things like that that can cause seizures. But other than that, not that I know of.
All right. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today. Well, follow up to the cats pooping out of the litter box. This is from Helena in Amherst. My cat sends her poop flying when she tries to bury it. She's just too vigorous in her digging.
That is a personal issue for that cat.
Okay.
She wants to try a deeper litter box.
Yeah. Gosh, I could talk about this all day. But let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. And we'll get to the phones in a moment. We'll be right back. John Schofield, Green Tea there. Hey, just while I have a minute, thanks to everybody who showed up at the Hart Clewitt Museum yesterday. We did a WAMC on the road event with the folks from Stair, and we did an antique evaluation show, which I'm cutting together now. It'll air September 10th, I believe. But a good time was had by all, thanks to Kathy Sheehan, who runs the Hart Clewitt and is Rensselaer County historian. A lot of fun. Hopefully it translates to the radio. I'll let you know about that. Meantime, Vox Pop, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Pets and Vets. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us today. Retired, you know, and very relaxed. Had nine holes before the show. Don in Hampton. Don, you're on.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. I have two Labrador Retrievers, a yellow and a black, and I comb them religiously every day. I give them baths and shampoos. She sheds all the time, and when I comb them, the same amount of hair comes out of both of them, but she seems to never stop shedding. I just wondered, is there any supplement I could give her or change her diet in some way?
So generally, for coat issues, I recommend going to some sort of fish oil supplement. You want to look for something that's got a mix of omega-3s and omega-6s. Generally, you'll find a bunch. They're all over the counter. You can find them in pet stores. You can find them online. I would get one made for dogs because it generally has the right mix. And that helps keep their coat as healthy as possible. That said, having owned a couple of Labradors, some Labradors shed like they are crazy. Yeah. So it may just be the individual dog happens to shed more than the other one.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Don, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 if you have a pet question for Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Kristen is in Albany. Kristen, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question about a cat that my sister and her family have left with me. She's an outdoor cat. I think she's 10 years old or so. She comes in and out of a door in my garage. On a number of occasions, she will leave the bottom half of a bunny rabbit, like, cleanly cut, surgically cut.
Yeah.
Cat's like half blind. She's old. Is she capable? Is she doing that? Or is she picking up the refuse of another animal?
I think she's doing it.
Yeah, I agree with Ray. I think she's doing it. A lot of cats are really good hunters, and they may have preferred species, and especially if they're baby bunnies and they find a nest, they will just wipe it out.
They'll just park right there and as they come out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And certainly the front half of the animals seem to be the taste. They don't like the guts as much,
no.
But the heads, you know.
Oh, delicious brains. They're zombies, Kristen.
Yes, yes. I even had a cat that I adopted that had a tumor that had eaten into her brain, and she could barely walk, and a chipmunk got in my house, and man, she snagged that thing. She could barely walk. She couldn't walk a straight line. She could barely walk at all, and she caught that chipmunk before I had time to walk back to the other half of the house.
This is one of the most disgusting pets and vets we've had in a while. Kristen, you want to follow up? You're good.
Thank you. I'm glad it's been confirmed, and Daisy is a killer.
Yeah, buddy.
I would just keep an eye out for tapeworms, because rabbits can carry tapeworms, so the cat may pick up tapeworms, and you'll see little pieces of white rice stuck around her fur by her butt.
Uh-huh. There you go. Kristen, thanks a lot. Okay, what fresh hell awaits? 800-348-2551. We'll go to Middletown and see what Eric has in store. Eric, you're on Pets and Vets. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call. We have an older male cat, and he has a couple of issues. The first one is that he has always liked to and will eat plastic. He'll tear a plastic bag up, and we find like pieces of it, and he'll throw it up. The second question I have is more serious. He has a tendency as of late, when he starts to purr, and we know that he's an older cat, and he's not, obviously we think it's just old age, but when he begins to purr, he almost begins to gag. He starts almost like a wheezing, gagging sound. And we're not sure exactly what's going on. We kind of suspect old age, but We were just wondering if you had some thoughts on that.
So question number one about the plastic. That is a pretty common thing in cats. And from listening to Sue Sekuli on this program, her feeling is it's something that they coat the plastic with that for some reason cats find very tasty. So it's just a matter of keeping it out of their reach. And as far as the gagging when he purrs, you know, the, when they purr, it involves their larynx, which is their voice box. And so, and that is also, of course, right where their opening is to their airways. So it would make me wonder if there's something going on in the back of his throat. Now, the problem is you're not going to be able to see that with the cat awake. It's almost impossible to get a look at the back of their throat. So if this continues or it's getting worse, you might want to consider a vet visit and seeing if they can find anything, and they might need to sedate him to get a look in the back of his throat and make sure there's not swelling or a growth or something back there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Do cats have tonsils?
Yes.
What about adenoids?
I've never completely understood what adenoids are.
I don't either.
I believe they're similar to tonsils.
I think they have, there is somewhere back there.
Yeah.
Well, let's just forget it and move on. 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin, Pets at Vets Today. Katie's in Hinsdale. Hello, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. So I have a 13-year-old dog named Enzo, and he just lost his best friend, Ella. Of 13 years. Yeah, she was 15, and we're both grieving, obviously. But I want to get him a new companion. You know, he's lonely, and he stopped eating for at least a week. He's back to eating now, and he ignores me. And, you know, he's here with me now. He's okay. But my question is, you know, I mean, I looked it up. My question is, how long do I wait? What signs do I see that he's okay to bring another dog in? Him.
Well, that's going to be a tough one because, I mean, obviously he's lived with this other dog his whole life. How is he around other dogs, strange dogs?
He likes them. He likes them. He likes little dogs. He's a little dog, and if he sees a little dog, he's friendly. He loves other dogs, except for big black dogs. He must have been traumatized. I don't know.
Right.
He's a little black guy, so.
Well, I mean,
maybe
one
he's competitive.
Right. I mean, if he likes being around other dogs, then he might enjoy another dog. I mean, one thing you might want to consider is fostering another little dog. And that way, if things don't work out, he doesn't stay with you. But, you know, kind of it would be a trial and error kind of thing. I mean, definitely dogs. Some dogs will go through a pretty good mourning period after they lose either another dog or a human in their house. And it can be variable in the length of time, and maybe having another friend would help him through that. But there's no way to know without trying.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, that's a great suggestion, actually, because I was thinking if I got a dog from the shelter, I would have to get it with the caveat that if Enzo was not happy, we would have to bring him back, which I would feel terrible about, of course.
Right.
So fostering maybe something we could do.
Well, yeah, and there
you.
Are
appreciate that.
Yeah, there are a lot of rescue groups that are looking for foster homes. So, you know, they'd be probably more than happy to have you take them.
What if it doesn't work out though? Are these rescue groups okay if you say, "Gosh, this isn't working
that's
out?"
That's a discussion you'd have to have with them.
By the way, Enzo's a great name for a dog, Katie. Good job. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right, now I want to just follow up for a moment here on something you said, Dr. O'Loughlin. You said dogs will sometimes go through mourning periods of whatever length. Are we as humans projecting too much of our own emotions, or is this something that you can verifiably show?
I mean, you'll see. They'll stop. Like she said, he stopped eating. He wasn't being social with them. I mean, they can definitely go into a down period after losing. I've had other dogs don't skip a beat.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
oh,
cats,
my God.
Cats forget it. Apparently. Oh, good. I'm glad we're rid of that
one. When our first dog passed away, the younger dog, who was always the submissive one, you know, she was the boss, and then she died. He was just like, "Yay! I don't have to share the bed anymore. This is great." You know, he didn't skip a beat.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Mary in Livingston Manor writes in, few months ago, my 12-year-old shepherd mix dog suddenly violently vomited and then fell over and could not move. Rushed him to the vet after 1,600 tests showed only his D-dimer was elevated. I can't even figure it out. A day later, he was walking but veering to the left. A few more days later, he was 90% better. 1 week later, it was like nothing happened. Does this sound like a stroke to you, or more likely the vertigo attack some senior dogs get? And that's from Mary in Livingston Manor. And Mary, I'm sorry I couldn't figure out some of these letters here.
So she said it was an older dog?
12 years old.
Yeah.
Shepherd mix. M dog.
12 is a little borderline, but yes, there is a geriatric vestibular disease that can strike older dogs. They're usually teenagers, but 12 in a big breed dog, it could be close enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it can hit them like a lightning bolt. They'll be fine 1 second, and suddenly they've got the severe case of the spins. And yes, it can make them nauseous. The other thing, when she first said that he vomited severely and then fell over, they can get, you can do something called vasovagal, where you stimulate a nerve, the vagus nerve, and it makes your blood pressure drop and you can pass out.
Ah, okay.
So that was my first thought when she said it, but then when she said veering to the left and all that, it does sound like vestibular, and that goes away on its own.
Really?
Yeah. Usually it's treatment is just helping them with their motion sickness, their dizziness. And helping them get around while they're dizzy. And you know, so it's nursing care and maybe some anti-nausea meds to help with their motion sickness.
So most likely, or at least possibly, nothing really to worry about.
Okay. Right. And you'll see nothing on the blood work if it's vestibular disease.
All right. Val writes in from Troy. I keep seeing ads on social media under the title, What Your Vet Doesn't Know. These are selling various probiotics claiming they prevent kidney disease in cats. Having recently lost a cat to kidney disease, I want to do the best for my current cat. Any thoughts?
Yeah.
Probiotics.
You're never going to hurt a cat with probiotics. It's not really going to do anything for the kidneys.
Yeah.
Really, with cats with kidney disease, it's hydration. Cats have a very bad thirst drive, so they don't drink well. And so, especially if they're on dry food.
Yeah.
Keeping them on a canned diet, making sure they have lots of fresh water, they're eating well, all of that is the best thing you can do for them.
The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. Let's go to Gilderland and Wendy. Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking our call.
Sure.
We have two dogs who have been having GI issues on and off since January, with initially some vomiting back in January, but mostly episodes of diarrhea. They've been repeatedly checked for, you know, blood work and fecal parasites. They've always been negative. It's happening again now. So we were up multiple times during the night, and the vet is suggesting a fecal PCR, which we're willing to do, but they have to stay off antibiotics for a month to get that test done. They're on Endosorb, and we're just, like, frustrated and pulling our hair out. I don't know really where to turn. I mean, they're on, the one dog has a lot of allergies, so they're on, sort of specific food for his allergy thing. I don't know. I'm just wondering if they have any other suggestions.
Hmm.
Can dogs eat cheese?
They can, but it doesn't always
doesn't
agree
blind
with
up?
Them. No. Yeah, so, I mean, my first thoughts, since it's both dogs, is, A, is there any chance they're getting into something out in the yard?
It's a fenced yard. They do, one of them eats rabbit turds, but garbage out there.
Descriptive.
We're surrounded by woods.
Okay. All right.
You know, and then the other thought would be, you know, something with the diet. you know, did they get a bad bag of food or something like that that got this started, and then you just haven't been able to get their guts, you know, to settle down. Yeah, that's a tough one. Have they talked to you at all about trying fiber in their diet?
You know, I've tried pumpkin in the past. The one with a lot of allergies has always had a sensitive gut. He does not tolerate even a teaspoon of pumpkin.
Right.
Will cause diarrhea, even when he's, you know, in its healthy state. We do have him on Proviable.
Okay. They have a newer Proviable that's called Proviable Fiber.
Okay.
That you might want to consider.
Okay.
We've had some good luck with that. Came out, you know, within the last year or so. And it's got, you know, both the Proviable and a fiber supplement. And it's not going to hurt the dog that has any kind of food allergy. Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, when I hear two dogs in a house, it makes me think something in the environment.
Yeah. I was really convinced the parasites were going to be positive, but
yeah. Have they just tried a dewormer? Just a general dewormer? I mean, you're not going to hurt them if they don't have parasites.
Okay.
I mean, that would be something to consider.
All right, Wendy, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. If you have a pet question for Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Speaking of rabbits, you know anything about rabbits?
Very little.
Okay, well, I'll ask
you
this
anyway. I
owned
a rabbit years and years and years ago.
All right, we'll see what you got here. Peter in Barryville writes in, my daughter has a rabbit. She's over the moon about it. A Dutch something or other. Yesterday,
Dutch belt, probably.
Dutch belt?
Yeah.
Yesterday, he was off his feet a bit and didn't run around very much when she had him out for exercise. She wants to rush him to the vet, but I don't see it as an emergency. Should we just wait a bit and look for any specific problems? My daughter's driving me to distraction. Peter, that's a different show, and I feel your pain. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, rabbit medicine is not my forte. I mean, I guess I would make sure the rabbit's on a good diet, getting fresh vegetables. You know, just rabbit pellets are usually not the greatest, so you want to make sure they're getting some fresh greens. You know, carrots.
But a one-day thing. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I might give it 24, 48 hours, but rabbits can also go downhill pretty quick.
Yeah.
So if it's not better in the next day or so, you might want to consider a vet visit.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, 800-348-2551 to Clinton. It's Anita. Hello, Anita. You're on.
Hi, doctor. I have a 5-year-old female cat, always indoors. And she contracted toxoplasmosis. She's on clindamycin for a month and getting better. But I just wondered, how would she have gotten that?
Whew. I mean, it's an environmental thing. So she, yeah, good question. I mean, I think they can even be infected as babies and have it for a long time before it activates. But it is a, you know, it's something they're going to get through the environment. I'm not sure if that's something. Do you have any houseplants?
Oh. Yeah, a few.
Because sometimes I've heard
I've heard of
soil, house, you know, plant soil being contaminated with parasites.
Interesting.
So I'm wondering if that could have been it.
Okay.
So,
well, thank you.
Otherwise, yeah, a little bit of a mystery.
Okay, thanks a lot, Anita. Quickly, what is toxoplasmosis?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that.
So you know,
it's a form of a parasite.
Okay,
I think it's considered a protozoa.
Listen, you're retired now. You don't have to answer any questions. We're just going to go with the flow. 800-348-2551. And let's see, Greenwich, or it could be Greenwich, Connecticut. I can never tell. Nancy, where are you?
Greenwich, New York.
Hello, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I have a question about possible threat of feral cats coming around. We have a kitten we got about a month ago. She's about 3 months old. She comes from a brood that's been living outside, but well cared for, but she really likes to be outside. She got attacked by one of the feral cats. $400 and 4 puncture wounds later.
Oof.
Meanwhile, we were trying to keep her inside, but she really wants to get out and sneaks out now and again. These three feral cats, or appear to be, are roaming around our property. They just appeared about, last week or 10 days, and different times of the day, different sides of the house. They're just kind of sitting there, staring. What to do?
Buy a fox.
Yeah. How to scare feral cats away. I mean, certainly make sure there's no food around that they could be coming for.
We have lots of birds around, but
yeah,
just appeared, though, just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, besides going out like with a air horn or something and scaring them away, make your house inhospitable to them. You know, cats are cats, and they're going to do what they want to do.
Why are they coming around? What, are they threatening her or want to be friends? Or who knows?
Yeah.
I doubt they want to be friends.
Yeah, I'm not sure what started it. But, you know, besides scaring them away, the only other option would be trapping them and getting them spayed and neutered through one of the feral cat organizations in the area. I don't know what's up by Greenwich, you know,
yeah,
down.
Yeah, we have. Well, there's no trapping these guys. Yeah. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say someone could.
Right. Right. I mean, you could contact them and explain that you're having this issue. They, you know, they deal with a lot more feral cats than I do, and they might have some better suggestions, or they might have someone who'd be willing to come over and trap.
All right.
For you.
Thank you.
Good luck, Nancy. Thanks a lot. We'll take a break here. Yeah, it's Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Yeah, she doesn't have to be here. She's retired, but she's here because she loves you. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll be back. Tragic Magic gets NRBQ here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, and Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's over there. You're presumably about to dial the phone, or maybe you're online right now. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, and let's see. Now, I mean, what are the odds? We had two Helenas, right? This is the second Helena today. Dueling Helenas. My 17-year-old female domestic short hair cat was diagnosed with early stage kidney disease. Can I feed her just dry kidney support food? What is the long-term prognosis for these cases?
So early kidney disease. So there's basically four stages of kidney disease. And the first stage, they're just urinating more. And because their first thing to go in the kidneys is their ability to recycle water as well as they used to. And their blood work is completely normal. And then the other stages, the blood work gets progressively worse. Mm. So the big thing with me with cats with kidney disease is how quickly is it progressing? So when they're first diagnosed, as far as how long does a cat have, I have no clue. I had a cat that was diagnosed with kidney disease when he was six. He died at 19 and a half.
Ah, okay.
So it's really progression. So I usually recommend rechecking them in 4 to 6 months after they've been diagnosed. And you see, are they stable? In which case, they could stay like that for years.
Okay.
If they're progressing, then we have more of an issue. Kidney diets... It depends. Early stage kidney disease, if they're not really progressing, I don't really push it.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of kidney diets is they're supposed to be lower in protein, which puts less stress on the kidneys. But sometimes they're so protein restricted that cats start to lose muscle, and that's not good. They do have an early stage kidney diet, which is better. But really, you want to keep them hydrated again because they tend to lose water. So a canned diet would be better than dry, but if he's one of these cats that will only eat dry, my feeling is if they love the kidney diet, fine, as long as they're maintaining their weight. If they hate the kidney diet, I'd rather them eat anything that they're going to eat well than not eat a kidney diet.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. Speaking of cats drinking water, let's go to Bearsville. It's Sarah's turn. Sarah, you're on.
Hi.
Hi there.
Earlier... Hi. Nice to hear you again. I heard the comment about the cat not drinking enough. And when my granddaughter visited me some years ago, she loves animals. She looked at my cat food and my water next to each other, and she said, "Oh no, Grandma, that's not the natural thing for a cat. You have to separate the water from the food." So I put the water up close to my sink, which means that I see when it's running low, and it's very easy to keep it topped up.
Huh.
So I thought I'd just send that along to the person that you said needs to have their cat drink more.
Yep. The other thing is
a thing? Cat, the water should be fine. I've never done that.
I honestly have never done that either. But and then there are some cats who like running water, so they make water fountains.
Yes.
I had one cat who just played in her water fountain and made a mess of it, so I had to get rid of it. But some cats, I had another cat that, well, actually it was the same cat who insisted we turn the sink on every day so she could drink right out of the sink while it was running.
Isn't that interesting?
So,
Well, Sarah, thanks a lot for that advice.
Cats are cats.
Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us to Clifton Park. And now for Valerie. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. And thank you for coming, doctor, in your retirement.
Yes. What can we do for you?
Congrats. So I have a calico. She is a feisty one, indoor cat. And she was diagnosed with diabetes. I realized it when she was drinking a lot of water and peeing a lot. My daughter actually mentioned it. She said, I'm cleaning a lot, big things of urine. So we got her treated. She was insulin dependent for about a year and a half. We got it under control. And then now it's controlled with her diet. She did she went from 20 pounds down to 12. And now she's more like 14, 15 because she was a little scrawny at that point.
Yep.
Now we changed vets. And we, this vet said, oh, she needs hard food and soft food. So we feed her a full can of soft food. We spread it out throughout the day, and she gets a little bit. And she told us, three quarters of a cup of hard food max for her for the day. So we spread out throughout the day. She basically whines about an hour before she's usually due to eat. But now she's starting to throw up fairly regularly. And we don't know, but it'll go days and days with no throwing up and then two or three days in a row. And we don't know if she's just getting herself all worked up or what the problem is. Could it be related to her diabetes previously? Is there a correlation? Just curious.
Yeah, I beg to differ with your vet. But once I have a cat who's been a diabetic, as far as I'm concerned, they're never going near dry food again. Because cats... Okay. Cats get type 2 diabetes. So it was related to the fact that your cat was 20 pounds. And we want to keep them away from carbs. And dry food is very high in carbs. The other thing with cats that are diabetics is their pancreas is not normal. I mean, that's where insulin is made. So they're more prone to pancreatitis, which will certainly make them vomit. I mean, my feeling would be I would try the cat back on an all-can diet and see how the cat does. Cats don't need dry food.
And does one can a day suffice, or would she probably need two cans?
For
a three-ounce can.
Oh, the little cans? Yeah, you want to do two cans a day.
Yeah.
Yep, two cans a day.
Okay.
I would try that.
That might be what keeps her from swimming.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Valerie, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. I almost had to look at my page, right? But now I remember who she is. Okay. Chris in Cornwall writes in, big question, is the, not sure. Oh, this goes back to the three-month-old cat with the feral cat circling around the house. Chris in Cornwall says, big question, is the young female cat spayed? If not, that would explain the feral cats hanging around as well as the attacks.
Except at 3 months. She's pre-puberty, so she's not going to be, I could see what they mean. If the cat was going into heat, then that could draw in some tomcats. But she's only 3 months old.
Okay.
So it's pretty unusual.
Fair enough. Russ and Hannah in Saratoga write in, we have a 14-year-old neutered male cat who we jokingly refer to as the old man. Lately, he's been acting like it. He seems to be stiff or uncomfortable when laying down on hardwood floors. We suspect it's something like arthritis. Is there anything we can give him to help him with this?
Absolutely. There's lots of things. Well, I shouldn't say lots. There are more things now than we used to have for cats. But yes, he absolutely has arthritis at 14.
Really? They all
pretty
do?
Much, oh, yeah. Every cat over the age of 10. They're actually saying now it's more like every cat over the age of 6, give or take. So, yes, that's a conversation to have with your vet. There are a lot of different options out there these days, from injectables to powders to tablets to all sorts of things.
Okay. Let's go back to our phone lines with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin to Gilderland and now to Joe. Joe, you're on. Very quiet. Hello, Joe. What do you know? Joe.
I'm trying to turn off the radio.
Oh, sorry, hold man. On. Good for you. All right, great. You're coming in loud and clear.
Okay, great. Okay, I just had to switch from the car to the phone.
Thanks.
So anyway, basically, I've got...
The call will be recorded.
The call will be recorded. Okay. You're violating copyright. Go ahead.
No, that was just my ear-hitting thing because I'm left-handed. Anyway, first of all, Ray, you do a great job, man. I moved up here from D.C. I've been listening to you for 20 years, and you're awesome.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome. The second thing is that I've got a rescue, and he's a big guy. He's about 92 pounds, probably a mastiff mix something or other. And just the last couple of months, when I'm going to take him somewhere and he starts to get excited about going outside, he has a cough whenever he gets excited. Now, sometimes if he's laying around for a while, he'll get up and he'll start doing it too. But he always does it when he has a cough. The other day, I had him playing with another dog and he's running around a lot. And he sounded very, for lack of a better word, wheezy, very raspy breathing. I've had somebody else that had their dog do this, and they said they went to the vet, and the vet said it was potentially heart-related. So that's my question.
Yeah, so you definitely want to rule out heart. Although a lot of dogs that have heart issues, it tends to happen more after they've been laying around quietly and then they get up because fluid settles around in their lungs. Right. Other things, too, that make me think a large breed older dog is he starting to have larynx issues? So dogs can get a laryngeal paralysis of varying degrees. It'll sometimes change the tone of their bark. They will snore more when they're sleeping, and they often get, like, when they're panting, their pant sounds harsh. I don't know if you've noticed any of that.
He's the most laid-back dog I've ever had in my life. I mean, he rarely barks. You know, once in a while he'll bark, but that's fine. But no, I haven't noticed any of that stuff.
Okay.
Once in a while, as he's been laying around taking a nap for a while, he'll get up and he'll cough a couple of times. What I found is that if I kind of rub massage underneath his chin, like massage his throat, it seems to help.
Yeah. So it sounds like he's got a little bit of an irritated trachea. And again, it might be very early laryngeal paralysis so that, you know, when they get excited, they can't control the opening and closing of their windpipe as well.
What happens if it goes untreated?
A lot of dogs don't get their laryngeal paralysis treated. You're basically managing them, making sure they don't get overheated in hot weather, things like that. But it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have him listened to make sure his heart's okay, because that's pretty easy. You listen to see if they have a heart murmur or not.
Okay.
All right.
All righty. Hey,
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Cheshire, Massachusetts. Laura, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Okay. Hi.
Hi there.
I appreciate you both. Thank you.
Thanks.
Especially working when you're after you retired. Thank you. I have a cat. I named him Puma. He's a feral cat. I think he's been feral his whole life. until I got him from the Humane Society. And he's you know, just a very loving cat, almost codependently loving, but that's okay. But he wakes me up at like between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. every single morning. Sometimes it's like just really, you know, I know he's trying to get my attention, obviously, really like jumping on very heavy and jumping kind of all over the bed and on me. And then sometimes it's less intense, but he's, you know, chewing on my hair or walking on me or something like that. So is there anything I can do about that?
Yeah, those are tough. I've had a couple of cats like that in my life. You know, besides throwing a blanket over your head and ignoring him and trying to make him understand, you know, what you don't want to do is give him any attention at that point, because that's what he's looking for. Yeah. Or you lock him out of the room. And he learns that he can't. I mean, then a lot of times they will sit at the door and cry. But yep. Unfortunately, there's not. You have to make him understand that that's not going to get him anything. Yeah. So it's either trying to ignore him until he gives up. It may take a couple of weeks of that, or locking him out of your room.
Yeah, good luck, Laura. As a longtime cat owner, they can do crazy things, and you know.
That's their wakey wakey hour. So they like that pre dawn hour. So.
All right.
Yeah, he's ready to play and. Yeah, I have tried those things, but okay, I figured I'd have to deal with it, you know.
Yep.
So there's some things you do have to deal with.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know what I ended up doing? Just ended up waking up at that hour. It's, you know, the cat won. Let's go to Kingston. Dan, you're on very quickly with Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
I have a rescue of a 10-year Scottish Terrier who just barks at everything under the sun all the time and is a very loud, piercing bark. Anybody walking by, as I'm driving by, he'll bark at, especially dogs, whenever any person walking by. And I was considering getting one of these shock collars, but I'm reluctant to do that.
Shock collar, oh boy.
Yeah, I had a dog. Unfortunately, Scotties as a breed,
they're so annoying, aren't
tend
they?
Tend to be barkers.
Yep.
That's just part of their personality. So, you know, sometimes it's unfortunately the dog you've got. Now, I just recently did a reactive dog class online for my new dog, and she was very much about sniffing. So she would have you take treats and put it down in the grass or down around the room you were in and have the dog find it. And the idea is that you get them calm down, because sniffing is very calming for dogs. And then you slowly introduce the trigger. So it would be a matter of taking him out in the yard if he's barking at people walking by and having him be far away while he's sniffing, and then slowly move him closer and closer. You know, those are things. The shock collars, I tried it with my last dog. It didn't do anything.
All right, Dan, we'll have to leave it there. Good luck. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
That went quick.
Yeah, I mean, you're booked again, I'm sure, but
yep.
Good luck out on the links.
Will do.
Support comes from Fatigan's Nursery, Latham, New York, featuring flowering planters, annuals, perennials, vegetable and herb starts, organic soils, over 100 years of gardening experience, family-owned and operated, Fatigans.com. ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, specializing in digital marketing for artists and arts organizations, website design, consultation, logos, and more, artspark.com. And Shelburne Museum, Vermont, featuring 39 buildings on 45 acres of gardens, new art exhibitions, outdoor sculptures, a working 1920s carousel, 220-foot steamboat, and more. Open daily, shelburnemuseum.org. Once again, thanks to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for joining us today. Thanks for your calls. Very much appreciated. Sorry if we didn't get to your question today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screen by Andrea Leong. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, it's been a while now. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum. We'll see you at 2 p.m.